the grade cricketer is a Twitter stream. It's about playing cricket at the grade level.
It's a tough, mean, dirty, dirty business being a grade cricketer.
A lot of cricketers, you know, that's all they know. They've done it since they're 10 and they have a deep-seated fear of change.
But the grade cricket is all about being the most alpha version of yourself as possible at all costs and at all times.
I don't bat or bowl. I just feel the gully, count the number of dot balls in a row, sledge 15-year-olds, make me feel better about myself.
Thanks champ.
Oh, no, you called me champ.
Hello and welcome to the Grade Cricketer Podcast. On today's show, we'll talk about what the hell we're going to talk about this summer after Australia absolutely obliterates Sri Lanka in the first T20 of the summer. Warner smashes 100, Maxwell doesn't get bounced and Steve Smith doesn't get a hit. We'll talk New Zealand and England, WBBL looking for selectors on seek and abandoning the coin toss. Ed Cowan is back on the show to properly start the summer and Sri Lankan legend Russell Arnold also joins the show. All of that before we answer your questions, fears, dreams, hopes, and everything else in hashtag AskTGC. Of course, none of this would be possible without our good friends at Budgie Smuggler, budgiesmuggler.com.au. My name is Ian Higgins, and I'm joined by Dave Edwards and Sam Perry. Boys, didn't it feel good to absolutely smash someone again?
Yeah, it was ruthless dominance from Australia. He goes, it engendered the safe feelings that we crave, that we have craved for a long time. It reminded me of watching Australia back in the mid to late 90s.
Yeah.
Australia post a mammoth 245 after 50 overs, you know, and then McDermott and McGrath have 2 for 6 after coming back from the news. Yeah. Sure, there's bushfires in the summer.
Yeah.
Sure, there's embers in my backyard.
Yeah.
But Australia's taking wickets. Bill Laurie's being silly.
Yeah.
People are getting pissed. The TV is not showing streakers. Mum says it's time for bed. Mum and Dad aren't fighting. Things are really, really good.
I could have done for some of that kind of mid 90s, like, between innings at 6 p.m. then it comes back at 7 p.m.
Yeah,
they usually
would
do current affair. The other news, so it would come back and there'd already been like 10 overs or something.
Yeah. Tracy Grimshaw
could
shit.
Have done with a bit of that.
Yeah. I remember just like Brett Lee coming in fading light. I'm talking a few years after that. Yeah. Brett Lee coming in and it's already like, you know, Wavell Hines is already nicked off.
Exactly.
I'm speaking of a very specific West Indian tour apparently for some reason, but that's in my mind and that's just what it felt like to be. Are you guys feeling safe now that Australia will just once again just smash every single team that comes out here?
Yeah, I mean, nothing to see here. Nothing wrong with Australian cricket. Flat track bully boys, Warner hitting 100. I feel safe. I feel cocooned in that safeness.
Yep.
And it feels pretty good. I mean, I'm sitting here today feeling very comfortable with where Australian cricket is at.
But it's funny, isn't it? Like, I already saw in the papers this morning in The Australian, for example, there was a slight shot at Warner's 100 saying, well, it's not a real test. You know, this isn't the real test.
And it's just it was
a T20. It's one of the great... Yeah, it's not a real test match. Yeah. And that was well pointed out from the professional journalist of 20, 30 years. But it's just one of the great things about Australia, isn't it? Like, when we lose, it's not good enough.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when we win too easily, cricket's not good
enough.
Doesn't count. If we retain rather than win the Ashes, that's not good enough either. Like, it's like our obsession with runs, you know? Like, it's not just runs, it's the right kind of runs we have to score. Like, what is a pure and correct victory for Australia? Like, how do you get the best, purest, most correct victory? Like, I'm just of the view, increasingly, that we're, like, just so entitled that we can only enjoy our victories, like, with a statute of limitations of, like, 20 years after they happen.
Yeah.
Steve Waugh's victories at the time, they were boringly good.
Yeah.
Now they're great. So we just have to wait 20 years to find out whether this win on the weekend was any good.
This was a great Warner 100 in the year 2047.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, nothing says summer is here like just destroying a hapless, you know, war-torn opposition.
Oh, they were hapless,
weren't
they?
In the first match of the summer. Fuck, it really took me by surprise, this game.
Yeah.
It was on at, for starters, it was on at 2:30
p.m.
Yeah. Which is when, like, ODIs used to be on in the 90s.
Right.
Which would make me feel safe. It was an ODI, but it was a T20.
Yeah.
I was expecting, like, a 5:30 kickoff.
Mm-hmm.
Why would they do? Do they think the Wallabies were going to make the semi-final and they just wanted to avoid a scheduling error?
That had to be it, right? Because Australia's side of the draw in, like, the Wallabies were the Wales team played South Africa last night.
Scared.
That would, like, very much worry me if Kevin Roberts and co. were basing their games off the Wallabies' performances.
Yeah. Well, that's what they played in Adelaide.
Maybe Fox Sports was scared, and then they got in CA's ear and went, lads, the Wallabies are on song here. This is their year.
And if it's not, then it'll be Wales versus
Cheeks
South Africa.
Is going to get us into the semi.
Yeah. I don't know why they played it in the afternoon, but, I mean, Adelaide was, it was decent attendance, I suppose, but it also kind of, this sets a scary precedent for mine for the summer of just, like, what do we talk about this summer? Just like how good we are again, but then none of this counts. Like, look how bad Sri Lanka were. Fuck, they were bad.
We talk about how
beat England in the World Cup, should be said. Mm. Cricket World Cup, they didn't beat in the Rugby World Cup.
Mm.
Sri Lanka
didn't play.
They didn't get picked into the World Cup. But,
yeah. Well, I mean, we did see as a result. Like, I mean, while there mightn't be much to talk about this summer, we saw some new innovations from Fox Sports this summer.
Yeah.
This is not an ad.
They love showing off their latest tech.
Yeah.
Well, we're with a different network. Yes. So.
What's that smash factor thing? It's like more wearable technology. How much fucking wearable technology can
What's
there
this?
Be?
What's the smash factor
it's
thing?
It's the thing that I think Fox has brought it in where there's like a sensor on the back that picks up vibrations to tell if, like, if someone hits a six, you can tell if they really got it.
Oh, okay.
Finally, you know, we can draw a line in the sand on whether someone actually got it or not.
Are those categories there? Like, yeah. Or like,
did
he hit a six?
It's like the red.
Exactly.
Yeah. The other one for me was the speed the ball was coming down the wicket. So like when the speed the ball's delivered to when it actually gets to the batsman.
Yeah.
Completely irrelevant information for mine. Like I know like Gilchrist was really pumping it up. No. You know, friend of the show, Adam Gilchrist. Mm. Close personal friend of mine as well, clearly. But but just none of these things matter.
That's
like,
just an opportunity.
I can't say. Like,
tell me what the barometric pressure is in Adelaide on the day, sure, but I don't really care what the speed is when the ball gets to the batsman.
Exactly.
And we've got blokes wearing like 57 different types of wearable technology now. Like I'm worried about the effects of radiation on the body. Like, obviously, not enough research has gone into this yet. I'm predicting a class action.
Yeah.
Which would have affected the old player's comfort level as well, anyway. Yeah.
That's a good point. That's why Siddle's on bananas now. He's just trying to minimise information in the body.
What was the comfort level based upon? I mean, was information supplied by the Bureau of Meteorology or just what Tony Gregg
Tony Gregg's like, it's not that comfortable.
Fucking comfy today.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. This Van Heusen's a little bit tight around the neck. Yeah,
these RMs.
Yeah.
Not breathing.
But I did say that that Fox had cameras out on the ground before play, which isn't abnormal, but it was but so kind of ensconced in the players are they now that they're interviewing players during warm-ups and throwdowns and stuff like that. And you just sort of think like where's this shit fucking end? Like how close do we need to get to the action in cricket? Like are we going to have VR headsets for post-match tubs?
I hope so.
And if so, I'm there.
Yeah.
I'm there for that.
Well, that sounds like some kind of esports evolution of cricket.
Yeah.
You know, VR technology and tubbing. I mean, that would be, I'd be up for that. That would be fantastic.
That's like Sky After Dark shit. Big Brother up late.
Yeah, hot dogs.
Yeah. Red,
with the, red button stuff. I saw when Glenn Maxwell came to the crease and Dave Warner was being interviewed by Mark Howard or someone on commentary while Glenn Maxwell was standing directly next to him. Like, I just thought, looking at that through a grade prism, how disconcerting would that be? Because when you come to the crease, you want to like maintain eye contact. Yeah. Like, what's this bloke doing?
Yeah.
Tell me what he's doing. What's the ball doing? How do I behave?
Yeah.
And he's just fucking got to sit through a day or conversing with someone remotely through an earpiece.
I don't know, man. I've had plenty of good wicket conversations with like oppressed blokes who like don't look at you and just stare straight ahead. And it's the most awkward 60 seconds of your life before someone just says, work hard.
Yeah. How does that affect your comfort levels?
Exactly.
Mate, his bloke's pretty up and down. He's got a bumper. Just watch out for the line that comes in a bit. Okay, all that information is just out my head completely immediately.
Yeah.
Did you guys ever talk to the batsman? When you got out, did you ever say anything to the batsman who was coming in? Or vice versa? Did you ever, the batsman who just got out, did they ever say anything to you? Or just like, oh, this bloke's pretty quick?
Not really, but I used to always walk a little bit towards them, then walk in with them to kind of hasten their comfort to the surroundings.
Oh, okay,
like if I was batting and someone was coming in the crease, I wouldn't walk all the way out some people did, and then... You know,
Accompany them like a father,
like a chaperone.
Father of the bride down the aisle.
Exactly. I wouldn't do that, but I did like to create a welcoming environment for the incoming batsman. But as you say, Pez, some people deliberately tried to avoid that.
Yeah.
So I learned that was even village too, to even have any kind of interaction with the incoming batsman. Like you waited in your crease to go and visit them was kind of like a junior thing to do. Which is another just ridiculous faux pas that some man in cricket has invented that you must observe lest you be ostracised for your days.
Yeah, yeah. Well, any kind of emotional connection that you're trying to forge with a teammate is you should be stricken from the record at all times.
Yeah, it's stiff up a little. It's that stiff upper lip stuff. Just like men should never talk to each other, even in the field of battle. You know, World War One stuff, mate. It's gone too far. Like, you know, the game's gone.
The game's gone.
Bats are too big. Mm. Integration too much. I don't.
Bats are too big, but they're also weigh like 600 grams as well.
Doesn't make any sense.
I agree with everything Rod Hogg says, frankly.
And
I just take his opinions and then pass them on as my own social functions. So that's what I do now.
I was for sure I do not check my opinion with Greta Thunberg. Good stuff, Rod.
Yeah, good stuff for him.
Bob Wills.
Inside didn't jokes he? From the boys there. Warner batted well.
Warner batted well, didn't he? You know, this is like good... I was going to just say so simplistically. Good bat, though, isn't he?
He's a good stick.
Yeah, he's a real good stick. Well, I expect him to score 1 trillion runs in Australia.
Mm.
Everyone's like, oh, he's back. It's like, he never left. He's
never
just,
left.
It's like Stark. He's just like, extremely good in home comforts. An extremely good player. He obviously wanted that 100. He did want it with Australia for 220 and a ball to go, and he was on strike. He just nurled one out to the boundary to get that.
The way he hit that single, he was like, he was holding the bat really low. He got down low. He was like, I'm going to nudge this out there and get this.
I don't care where this ball is bowled. The ball's going there, and we're running one, and I'm doing the Toyota leap.
Well, not sponsored by them. I'm still doing the Toyota leap. It's ingrained in me, brand imprinting.
It's funny though, isn't it? Like it's a wonderfully nuanced appreciation of PR though. Like he could do the team thing and just like never in a game of cricket will you have a better, more free opportunity to hit a six. Mm. Right? There's no reason for him to hit a single. And he decides to do it because he's like, that 100 for me, that launches my summer. I'm launched now. That's front page. If he doesn't, if he gets caught in the boundary, if he holds out and it's 99, it's a different story altogether. So I'm just saying Roxy, you know, that's fantastic stuff.
This was his season launch, wasn't it? It was. Big gala, he invited all his stakeholders there. This is my launch.
Yeah. It was his birthday yesterday, 33.
What a day.
Yeah.
100 on your birthday.
So Rocky just goes us in the earpiece as long as with Mark Howard.
Exactly.
Just one here Davey, one here Bull.
Same with Stark, though, as well. Probably like one of the best, if not the best, T20 bowler in the world. Lots of question marks over him and whether he'll play. Like Stark is arguably the number one Australian quick in the country, in Australia. You know, the guy likes bowling on dry, abrasive surfaces.
Just took 10 foot.
With great air speed and reverse swing. It works great really well here. Like, we all in our lives have, like, home games and away games, don't we? You know, like, I like going to the pub with my mates in the sun. I'm charismatic and I perform very well there. If I go to a fucking 2-year-old's birthday party, you know, at 11 a.m. and I'm surf Chardonnay and I have to perform, I'm not as good.
Yeah.
And that's like Stark in England. It's the same shit. Yeah. We all have a home and away.
I prefer taking the light rail to work. You know, I don't like getting on city rail trains.
You play
better on them.
Exactly. Yeah. So pick your light
more,
rail.
But I prefer them.
Just going back to Warner. So there were 7 balls left. I'm just trying to think of the situation. Maxwell was still in. Maxwell was still in. Maxwell hit a single down to third man. Therefore, he'd be back on strike for the last over. Warner at this point was on 93 or something like that. So Warner obviously wants 100 for his PR move, as we've just discussed. His own present on his birthday. Yep. And then the ball gets thrown and Keeper misses it and it hits Warner and deflects into the offside. There was a man backing up, so it would have been no overthrow. Hits Warner and he goes, yeah, we'll take one there. I'll get myself back on strike for next over. Yeah. That's great level of shithousery.
Yeah.
Great level.
Yeah.
What's he going to do there? I mean, what's he just going to turn it down, isn't he? I mean, that would be the move to win the hearts of the nation. Well, he's already won our hearts. Where are we on the hearts in terms of David Warner winning them?
Runs. He's runs equals hearts. Forgiveness. Runs that's equals the, yeah. that, that's the formula.
Yes.
Score the runs and we'll forgive you for anything.
Okay.
I don't even remember what happened before, like, why Steve Smith got suspended.
No.
I don't remember.
Not since the Ashes.
Yeah. No one's made a joke about that in a while. All right. Well, at what point did Australia think that they were going to win yesterday? Because that's part of Warner's single off last ball, right? They were like, we've already got 50 too many here, probably 100 too many against this terrible team.
At what point did they won?
At what point did they think? What point did they know they won the game?
Well, I don't know what that meant. Yeah. Well, when they were none for 80 off 8, just the symmetry and the dominance of that.
Nice.
Yeah. That's probably when they thought. It was certainly when I thought to turn off my television set for the summer.
Was that, like once, you know, Maxwell came in and just started like showing off, you know, like he was globetrotting, walloping the ball, flicking it, and then like, you know, like he finally won that game that he'd been promising to win us during the World Cup for us. And
David Warner hitting like reverse sweep boundaries and them saying, you know, they practice those these days. You know, they actually get in the nets and practice those shots that they do in the middle.
Yeah.
Did you know that?
Yeah, I didn't know that. But
I didn't think that they would practice the things that they do.
I was reminded when that was happening, when like Maxwell used to bat 3 for Australia in tests and he played a reverse sweep in a test match. That was that was loose in hindsight.
Yeah, it's a different era though. You've got to consider it within the context of the era that it was within.
It's like a cover drive for him, to be fair.
He did come out after the game and say, because he's like batting with a more open stance now, Maxwell.
Yeah, that's right.
And he's obviously played well. And he said, I've been trying to get my right eye involved in the game more. I'm just like, shit, dude, you've been playing with one eye. How good can he be?
Yeah, that explains the World Cup and him not being able to bat more than 3 balls.
Well, now he's using 2 eyes. Sky's the limit.
He'll open the batting for Australia and bowling. So Australia were looking for a selector and they posted a message out on Seek, which was an interesting method to do that. There's some names being tossed up as to who the selectors are going to be. Brad Hodge wants to do it. I think we just suggested Ed Cowan, who's coming on the show. So we'll just ask him like who he's going to pick in the first test.
Sydney Morning Herald did as well.
Did they?
Yeah, just chucked his name in.
Nice.
Yeah, so we're going to speak to a potential selector.
Yeah.
I don't think his employers are aware of that.
Would you guys want to do that? I got a message from my brother And he said, like, do you want to do this? I was like, no, probably just easy to make jokes about the selectors and actually do it. Yeah. Do you guys want to do it? Want to be selectors?
Well, I saw that the salary range on the CCAD was 150K plus.
Oh, so not enough for you.
So presumably there's some incentive-based scheme on top of that.
Okay.
So you're looking at 200 plus OTE at least, I would have thought. Yeah. You know, if we split that three ways, say we've got a selection between us. We're a third, effectively, of a selector each.
Mm. Mate, let's just write another book.
Yep. Yeah, well, that's where the real money
that's
is.
Where the real money
that's where the real money is.
Yeah.
Do you think...
Why did they publicly advertise on Seek.com?
No, well, I think it must have been like a... And this is like a kudos to CA. I think it's a genuine PR play.
Yeah.
Because I reckon it's they're sitting down in their like playful PR meeting and they're like, well, every Australian thinks they're a selector. Why don't we put it on Seek.com.au? Yeah. And you're like, it's actually quite a clever way to... really highlight and amplify to people that no longer is Greg Chappell involved in cricket anymore. You know, and then like it just starts a whole bunch of conversations. Everyone's like, oh, I'm going to chuck my name in the ring. Well, Seek.com.au. I actually saw it through LinkedIn. But,
Well, it's actually a really good way of getting customer data because thousands of blokes. It was a data exercise. Big data. Get those customer data.
Yeah.
Not to be confused with Sarav Ganguly. Big data.
Big data. Big data. Big data. Yeah, that's
we'll
different.
Get to that.
Yeah, we'll
But like on the sort of those platforms, we do have to shout out to Matt Linton, who wrote in last week with one of the great posts to TGC, to the social. We don't normally like overlap these things, but this is a guy who wrote in. He opened the batting for Curtin Park against Swanburn in WA, and he was bowled by a guy called D. Walser. And 24 hours later, David Walser had then searched him on LinkedIn, and it turned up on his profile page. And like, I know we like poo-poo this with RTGC, but I truly want to know who the fuck is the alpha there. You know what I mean? Because then he's come to TGC as well, Matt Linton, and kind of exposed him. But like, I don't think it gets much better than fucking clean bowling somebody and then just checking them on LinkedIn.
So the timeline is that he definitely checked it after.
Yeah,
it
was after.
It would be funny if he did it before, just researching him.
Looking for any kind of gaps in his CV.
Would it help to know somebody's professional capacity or
I think so. I mean, obviously there are settings on LinkedIn where you can be in a private mode where no one can see that you're spying on another person's profile, but then you don't come up when they see that someone's looked at your LinkedIn
premium,
profile.
Is that premium shit? That sounds...
Well, this bloke obviously doesn't care who sees. Like, he's obviously taken the wicket. So he's the alpha.
Reckless.
And he's like, mate, I'm going to go on this. I'm going to look at my profile. My profile's public. He'll see that I've seen this. Yeah. And he would have seen the scorecard when I got him out the other day. And he'll be able to put two and two together.
But have you ever like... Have you ever got somebody out and then just become curious about their professional life?
what would trigger that?
Like he's walking off, he's like, I wonder what he does for a job.
Walks like a fucking barrister, that bloke. Absolute bellend.
What are you, a fucking judge, mate? Yes. Yes, Supreme Court judge.
Unless, like, the bowler is, like, you know, he's in between jobs and he's, like, maybe had, like, matching kit. Yeah. So he's, like, oh, he's quite well-to-do. He's got a bit of cash behind him. What he does for an income. Well, maybe I can link in with him.
In the first book of The Great Cricketer, The Great Cricketer actually explored networking opportunities with the player he was batting with.
Yeah, that's right.
After they discovered they had a shared interest in sales. So, you know, these things can happen on a cricket field.
Why does everything we joke about come true? England and New Zealand are playing, it's a weird, they've got five T20s. It starts on Friday coming. Then they've got two tests. And for some reason, the two tests that they're playing in is outside the Test Championship, which I don't understand why that's a thing. However, it does toss up a thing of like, so Joe Root's captaincy was kind of questioned towards the end, last two tests of the Ashes series, and they're kind of thinking like, well, because his numbers are way down as a captain as opposed to when he was batting four and not captain and when Alistair Cook was doing it. So is there an opportunity here for England to maybe give it to someone else? They might have a similar issue with like the Payne-Smith thing. It's like, who else is there to give it to? Jofra?
All I know about England is, firstly, like, the poor Kiwis in relation to them after our Saturday's rugby union result.
Absolutely
dicked by them in the cricket, and now in the rugby, whereas the rugby was a very, like, well, it was a comprehensive result.
Yeah.
All I know with England is, like, I need them to give their captaincy to someone who, like, represents England. Like, that rugby union result was great for England because it was just classically England, you know, clinical, set piece, like excellence, great kicking. Like it was all about discipline. Like what I struggle with this England side is that they're becoming this like mercurial, flying, attractive cricketing nation. And I don't get it from a brand point of view. Like good luck, but I don't, it doesn't compute to me. Like Australia has to be Death Star, boorish, arrogant, you know,
hard, fast, aggressive, hard, fast, aggressive,
yeah,
masculine.
Exactly. Mm. I don't like them trying to be nice. You know what I mean? And England's the same thing. It's like
every cricketing nation must have their own identity and stick to it at all times.
Yeah, like England needs to be obstinate bulldogs. Tragic. You know, like I want more trot. You know, I want less Bairstow. I do like Bairstow. You know, like I want more Jack Hobbs. You know,
sure.
I want more Alistair Cook. I just go back to the brand. You know, that I can understand.
Mm-hmm.
Go back to England. England rugby. They've got it right. England, stop trying to be cool and attractive and fun. Mm. It doesn't work for you.
Well, something that's not cool is their new coach. Because I didn't actually know.
Let's see where he's going.
Like. They've selected a bloke whose name I'm not familiar with.
Right.
Yeah. And obviously they didn't take that into consideration when making the selection. But, I mean, can you guys give me a bit of insight into this guy? Because this happened while I was away. I was, you know, I didn't actually compute it until the other day that they had a new coach. Mm. But his name is Chris Silverwood.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of tests in the 90s, a couple of ODIs. How many tests did you play, mate? Well, what did anyone know anything about?
No, that's the good gear. I don't really, but that's what I want.
But that's what I'm saying. It might be more on brand than this glamorous, glitzy England.
Mm. I could be wrong, but I've heard him talk once or twice, and he seems to could be wrong about where he's from, but has a southernish kind of accent, and he's sort of one of the boys. The guys respect him, you know. He's just going to bring a few little tweaks and changes. Okay. He's not coming in with the new.
He's not a turnaround CEO.
No, he's not a turnaround CEO. And so I like that. This is the England that I can compute. That's got nothing to do with whether they're going to be good or not.
I've got a theory that I started to see during the World Cup and in the Ashes. Like, England are becoming Australia. First of all, they're going to hold the Cricket World Cup and probably the Rugby World Cup as well. Well, potentially that's going to happen at the same time. But they're being really assertive. They're kind of being quite arrogant on the field as well, England. But there's real Australian culture brought about by obviously Brexit and climate change. Yeah. And now they're picking coaches good around the group. You know, he's just one of the boys. They like him. He's got a bit of bad in a couple of test matches. Like,
good
it's
with
just
a laptop.
Good with a laptop. Yeah, it's very. It's all very.
Well, it
Australian.
Is. I mean, because they've come from Trevor Bayliss, obviously. That's Eddie Jones is the rugby union coach, and then all the 100 coaches are pretty much fucking Australian.
Yeah.
Kadish, Lehman.
Yeah.
Okay, and who else? Bayliss.
Warne.
Gillespie.
Warne.
Yeah. Warne. Yeah. Fucking hell.
Because we were hoping our close personal friend Jason Gillespie was going to get the coaching
was he
role.
In the running? I don't. Did he put his name in the hat?
Oh, I think he was in the running.
Yeah.
He was in the running.
Was he?
Yeah. And for that London live show, the last show he did. Yeah. He didn't want to say too much because he was like, well, I'm going to be the coach of the national team soon. But now that he won't be doing that, the Brisbane live show is going to be great because now he can say whatever he wants.
Just to clarify, he didn't say those words, I'm going to be the national coach soon. But,
yeah. I don't want to put words in his mouth.
Yeah.
He'll just tear up his NDA and tell us everything.
So on that New Zealand tour, which has been absolutely comprehensively wrapped up by us, Bairstow has been dropped from test matches, and Ed Smith, who's the chairman of selectors, has said, well, this is a chance for Johnny to sort of go again, to start again, to reset. I don't know what that means, how many runs do you need to get in T20s to be like, okay, you can bat six for the test team again?
Well, I mean, it's probably not a nice thing to hear from the head of selectors that you need to reset. Doesn't that mean just start again?
He's been using one eye,
like
Maxwell.
It's a factory reset on an iPhone. Yeah. Clear all your data.
Have you tried turning it on and off again?
Yeah.
Well, that's what they're trying to do to Johnny Bairstow. Just turn him off and on again. Runs will come from there.
And all of the cookies are gone.
Yeah. Everything. Manufacturer reset, the way it came from the factory. And that's what they want.
And that's not to be confused with the reset of starting again if you hit a 50. Someone says start again. It's like, why would I start again? I want 50.
Yeah.
Like Bradman used to, Bradman used to say, my secret was every ball I tread like it was my first. It's like, that's a tough existence.
Well, stupid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Besieged by nerves, unsure of what the ball's doing.
Besieged by nerves.
Exactly. Constantly asking the non-striker what's he doing with it.
How many balls are left after every ball?
Yeah. Mate, you're on 230. You tell me what he's doing with it.
No, it's my first ball.
Yeah, first ball. Now, a lot going on with Bradman, to be fair. Mm. Okay, so Cam Williamson's out at the T20s with a hip injury. Trent Bolt is going to miss the first three of those five T20s. What's his name? Tim Southee's going to captain New Zealand.
Okay.
And then test matches. But
that doesn't mean anything because it's not part of the test.
I think it's actually going to be a really exciting series as a whole. I mean, I still don't understand why it's outside the test championship. But England in New Zealand's interesting because there's wickets actually, it's good to watch. It actually might be more interesting series than what's going to happen in Australia.
Yeah, they're not lopsided. They're two teams that come from similar-ish kind of wickets and upbringings.
Yeah.
Yeah, and obviously New Zealand will be keen to get one back on their old rivals England after the World Cup.
Mm.
So that was Siri.
All right. The WBBL, Scorchers versus Renegades game. The game was delayed by 15 minutes after a fire alarm went off inside the Junction Oval.
Yeah.
The building was evacuated without incident, with some burnt toast to blame. Mm-hmm. So I put it to you guys, what's the strangest way you've ever seen a game delayed or is stopped?
This is how we're covering the WBBL.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's how I am.
Cool. All right, well, I got two. The first one was I once hit a throwdown onto a pitch at North Sydney Oval, just to let you know I was playing there, and after a rain delay, so the pitch was soft, and then the roller went over it on a good length and left a massive hole, and we waited for an hour. And then the second one was a game was delayed in sixth grade that I was playing into because one of the batsmen on the opposition side got bumped, and he was wearing glasses, and it smashed his glasses and like cut his face, and he was dripping with blood onto the pitch. And then he had a business shirt with sleeves rolled up, chucked his bat down onto the ground and like started walking towards the bowler to fight him with like blood and glasses all over his face.
Oh, so my God.
Did he take his shirt off?
Oh, no.
Did his shirt front him?
Well, like, yeah, so to speak. So there was a bit of a delay while that scuffle was dealt with. So just,
sorry, how did that finish?
I think he like he walked up to him and then like he was like he sort of had a like what, he was sort of in shock, so he wanted to, it was a bit of a red mist thing.
Yeah.
And then when he got closer to him, he was like, oh, don't
yeah,
I don't really want to do this. And, like, and then the umpires, like as they always do, like walked in between, but they did it way too slowly. It was already dissipating, and then they like walked in with their hands on their back and the whole thing. So
it was one of those things where you get to a certain point, then you like you want your mates to hold you back.
Yeah.
And then you'll even say, hold me back, lads, hold me back. Mm. Who knows what I'll do.
No, they were like, cheering, lads.
Everyone's just like, mate, your fucking glasses are all over the pitch.
Yeah, are you okay, sir?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to say the game got held up while they had to pick up all the little pieces of glass.
Yeah.
All right, just reasons.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I can't remember, really. But in my darkest moments, I did occasionally fantasize about calling it a bomb threat to get games cancelled.
That happened in a test match in New Zealand last summer. There was a bomb threat.
I took note of that. I never did it, though. My great cricket career took place post 9/11, politically sensitive era. So
yeah,
wouldn't have been appropriate to call in a bomb threat.
Couldn't have done it.
Who would you call at like North Sydney number two to call in a bomb threat? Like Bevan
White.
Yeah,
lads, it's been a bomb threat.
I mean, would the club president know to take it seriously? He'd be like, what?
Well, what the thing is, I would have installed some like voice modulation software on my phone.
Yeah. Fuck, you know, like dark web shit.
Affair. Yeah, just no one would have known my identity.
Yeah.
Like when you get a call from the ATO.
Yeah.
You think Glenn Maxwell issued a few bomb threats on the weekend? What was yours, Baz? Here goes.
I remember it was Chatswood Oval, and that was a common grounds where underage teens would engage in underage sex and also drinking. Yeah. And there was
the R. Kelly documentary on Netflix.
That's right. And I was fielding. These kids were like 15, 16. They were like hammered and just like came onto the field. Like one bloke was like trying to fight like one of our guys, and it was just a ruckus, and it was just uncomfortable. Yeah. So that's what happened in the WBBL. This,
well, I'm glad we covered it.
There's still more chat about Phoebe Litchfield as well, who's 16, because you know she's destroying everybody, and that's like right. There was a big feature piece on her over the weekend saying how's like she speaking of underage stuff, but like she goes to like Kinross Wallaroy in Orange. And like goes to like four classes at school, then gets on a regional flight, probably wrecks, you know, to state training when she's 16. And they're like talking about how like she's really mature, but when they put her in like through tough situations, you know, dry up her run scoring in one area in the nets or something, she has to solve problems and stuff. They're like, that's when you see the 16-year-old. Mm. I'm like, well, what the fuck were you doing when you were 16? Like, I was underage drinking in a park with mates. Yeah. You know what I mean? I wasn't being put in those tough situations in state training. All right, I'm sure she'll be fine.
Did you come onto my game one day when you were drinking at Chatswood Oval?
Mm-hmm.
One thing about Rex, you don't get any points for Rex, so I don't know why she's even bothering.
That's a good point.
Nice.
Faf du Plessis said, this is after the South Africa series, but they struggled a little bit in India. They gave it a good go by turning up, but they struggled. Faf du Plessis says that we should get rid of the toss, and that the away team should have the choice of what they want to do first. Thoughts on this?
I mean, at test level, I don't mind the idea of fucking it off. At professional level, obviously at grade level and park level, it's extremely important because it's a huge moment in the game. Everyone's craning their necks to understand what's happening.
Yeah.
You know, the body language of the captains,
both
captains are analysed at length. It's a really important part. And once the toss has been decided, it shapes your weekend or your weekends going forward. So it's critical that we keep it at a park level.
Mm.
Internationals, though, I mean, fucking the teams at home are just dominating world cricket at the moment. So I'm very happy. And for me, the toss has been fucked up ever since bat flip came in the BBL. There's no sacrilege. That's sacrilegious.
We seem to be wanting to tinkering with it. I was thinking of the bat flip as well. Like, we need to make it sexier somehow and need to make the game more interesting for I don't know who. But I understand that the
people
test
that aren't watching it.
Yeah, exactly.
You've got to make it interesting to the people that aren't watching it.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. Pez, do you want it? Do you want it in? Do you want to fuck off the coin toss?
It's such a strange one. I don't know. Anything that kind of forces home teams to create wickets that are probably conducive to both sides doing okay is fine by me. But I would say that, wouldn't I, given that, you know, Australia haven't beaten India in India, and that would annoy them greatly if we did.
But, like, isn't every international cricket council, every international cricket board, their success financially is based on home wins? You win your games at home, so people come because they want to watch the home team win.
Yeah.
We didn't do that last
year.
We'll
have to get Brady gone to talk about.
Yeah, okay, good point.
I see governance issues.
All right, we're going to speak to, we've got two guests on this show. We've got Ed Cowan and Russell Arnold coming up. Then after that, #AskTGC.
Boys, I've been trying to get this man on for many, many years. He's a hero of mine, of sorts. I was lucky enough in 2009 to play at the Sydney Tigers Cricket Club alongside this Sri Lankan great, and my main memories of Russell Arnold are that he was swamped by pretty much bogan Sydney cricketers for a long period of time and alphaed them and dominated them at all times and costs all while remaining a very, very polite and nice person. It just goes to show it can be done. You can be a good bloke and be very good at cricket. It's our great pleasure to bring on to the show Russell Arnold. Rusty, welcome.
Thanks, guys. Hope all's well.
All is very well. And just for the benefit of the listeners, it's been a real tech issue to even get this conversation sorted up. So we say thank you to Russell for even being part of it. Rusty, can you just quickly tell us, firstly, your impressions of playing grade cricket, your memories of playing it, and how it compares to other cricket you played around the world?
Oh, yeah. Well, initially, a lot different because I was never used to showing up over 2 weekends to complete the one game. So getting used to that was a bit of a challenge. And otherwise, it was keenly contested. I thought it was great fun, in fact. Lots of good memories. And I'll also have to add to that never been sledged as much as I got sledged while playing for the Sydney Tigers.
Well, Kyle, what's the kind of sledging that you get as a former test great? Coming into grade cricket in Australia, you know, people have obviously read your crick info profile. What's the content that comes out of Australian men's mouths towards you on a grade cricket scenario?
like to have a chirp at you. All in good fun, of course. And try to tell you that stuff like, oh, you're boring. How did you end up playing international cricket, you know, stuff like that.
It's good stuff.
Another guy, I had just started commentary when I think one of the youngsters in one of the opposing teams said, your commentary is as boring as your batting.
So it's commenting on your body of work.
Yeah, stuff like that.
That one obviously stuck, Russell, if you remember it.
Yeah, it did. It's one of those that I remember, so it did stick. But it was good fun, stuff like that. Yeah.
Well, Rusty,
and
of course,
a few words that I can't mention here because I believe it's a family.
Oh no, you can.
It's not a family show.
It's
exclusively males between the age of 18 and 34.
Yeah, it's anti-family podcast, actually.
Now, Russell, I had the pleasure of watching you often stand without any hat on or helmet, hitting first grade opening bowlers over cover. Where I couldn't actually see the ball, or many of us actually couldn't. A lot of us watched Australia versus Sri Lanka yesterday. Russell, you know, it's so hard for Australians to even compute whether our side is good or the teams we're playing against are bad. Can you just give us a sense of where Sri Lankan cricket is at the moment, both at sort of T20 level and just broadly?
Just trying to discover what type of game they want to play. I think they've got a good group, quite a few skilled players. The tour of Pakistan was actually a blessing in disguise, because a lot of the players who had been around, senior, you could say, or experienced players, did not tour. So it was the younger guys who got an opportunity, and they did go out there and shine. There were plenty of guys who showed a lot of skill. And mind you, Pakistan are the number one T20 side in the world. So it was no mean feat beating them 3-0. When the bowlers, they were brilliant. Even under pressure, there was a lot of good performances that coming that were coming through. So it's about now getting the right mix, the right balance, and what type of game plan you want to take forward. But of course, you've got to remember that Australian conditions are so different than most of these players haven't played here. So that's another thing they'll have to adjust to, and very fast. The bounce here conditions means that you need different options when scoring runs or your breakthrough, breakaway shot. And same with the bowling, the lengths are different, and the type of variations you need to bring in are slightly different. So these are things that they'll have to pick up soon if they really want to compete. But at the end of the day, the experience on this tour will only serve them well, because at the end of they're all eyeing a year's time, isn't it?
Just on the conditions, Russell, I mean, you've obviously played in Australia a fair bit. Like, how different did you actually find it from batting in home and in the Asian countries as well, as opposed to the fast and bouncy wickets here? Is it almost a fear thing that the ball bounces and gets around the sort of the chest and neck region a lot more, or is it hitting the splice of the bat? I mean, like, how different is it to adapt for Asian countries, particularly coming out to Australia?
It is very different, because your scoring options, you're under pressure, you fall back on certain instincts. And those instincts do not suit these conditions. And even if you're grown up in these conditions and your technique and your mindset is all in tune for these conditions, there are moments where you're stressed and under pressure. So it's those moments that you have to manage. The better players who come from the subcontinent, you'll see that they always get runs. Mm-hmm. But to go on and get the big runs is the challenge, because you fall back on your natural instinct, which probably doesn't suit these conditions. To me, it's more about, if you talk about the longer game or cricket itself, it's the single options that are different. You bowl crap, you bowl a half volley, you will drive it anyway. Mm-hmm. If it's short and therefore the cut, you'll cut it anyway. Mm-hmm. But how are you going to maneuver the bowling? How are you going to get off strike and get things rolling in your favour? Those are the ones that really get tricky. In the subcontinent, it doesn't bounce as much. Let's say the ball's around your waist. You can use your wrists, create a bit of pace and work it onto the leg side or run it down to third man. But here you're trying to run it down to third man, that extra bounce ends up at slip. Mm-hmm. So it's those little nitty-gritties, and how you're going to work around that is the biggest difference for me. It's not about hitting the ball. Mm-hmm. That you'll do it if it's there anyway.
Rusty, a very comprehensive answer, and I think I'd love to get you on another time to talk through things like your great test career, your international career, and even stories from the ICL, which were probably hilarious. But I'm conscious that we've sort of called you a bit late, and you've got places to be, so we'll have to save it till that time. But thank you anyway for coming on and at least telling us your impressions of grade cricket and Sri Lanka at the moment.
No worries, guys. We'll have a longer chat next time. Sorry about that.
Don't be sorry. It's our fault. Cheers, Rusty.
Cheers, man.
Last week, we kicked off the Great Australian Rig 11, gentlemen, which is basically about celebrating rigs of all shapes and sizes. We're obviously
celebration.
We're fascinated with rigs here in Australia. Don Horn, the lucky country. Yeah, I'm sure there's a chapter on rigs. I have a jerky vocal motion. And so we're continuing that this week. We had a few nominations through the week. A lot came in for Nathan Lyon. I guess he's got a sort of, how would you describe his rig?
Well, it's wiry, isn't it? Mm. Kind of, well, it just kind of sits there and hangs down as if it's held on a coat hanger. Mm. It's kind of wide, well, shapeless. I'm not knocking it. Mm. I'm just saying,
obviously, we're celebrating it.
Mm. It's a celebration.
Mm. Nathan Lyon looks like he works in an office. He's on an office rig. Mm.
Mm. Like, and do you reckon Cameron Smith
strikes me the sort of person that would turn up to the game actually and go, just off the office here, bro. Hey, boss. Gary?
Definitely talks out of the side of his mouth.
For sure.
Definitely
the
kind of bloke who takes photos on Instagram and says, my office for the day. Like a gabber or something.
Yeah. Best job in the world, sorry. Yeah.
So we're naming a Great Australian Rig 11 with Budgie Smuggler, and we want your suggestions for great Australian rigs. They have to have come from Australia, and what we're going to do is going to put them onto a pair of custom smugglers with the, I hope that many people will purchase it and wear, budgies with men's rigs all over them, normal stuff. So let's just talk about a couple of rigs that we think might be able to go on. Any body part, any type from around Australia. What are the types of, I mean, he goes, you're a rig man. Like, there are different shapes of rigs, aren't there? There's like the mesomorph and the
endomorph.
And whatever.
Yeah.
Can you name it just off the top of your head? couple of endomorphs, mesomorphs.
No, I was just, well, for some reason in my head, I'm just keep
what
thinking
are you
about.
What bloke's talking about?
I just keep thinking about Gladstone Small. I don't know okay, why yeah. I'm thinking about. Obviously, playing for
England.
It's
a poster we've got
yeah.
in that studio.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, he's a screensaver on my phone. Mm. But just that like lack of neck is just, I don't know why I was thinking about that. But then I was thinking about Mitch Marsh's head. Like, they call him the Bison, and his head, as we met him recently in person.
Is the head part of the rig?
Oh, yeah.
Big time.
Absolutely.
His head is probably the most...
That's why the voice is an instrument.
Oh, yeah.
Got me there.
Yeah. His head is quite... It's alarmingly big. I was alarmed the first time I saw it.
Is it bigger than Cam Bancroft's? Because he's got, no. he got a big head.
He's got a hard head. It's different.
Okay. Yeah. Mm.
Density of head versus just general. Yeah.
Bancroft's more like Hey Arnold. It's more width to it, but like
It's wide. It's a wide head.
It's a wide head, but Mitch Marsh's. It's just it's thick.
It is thick, isn't it? For me, I think I'd like to see Brett Lee's hamstrings. So you know, like the way he bounded in to the crease, and you know the way that those pants were fitted around part of his body as you saw it running in, so symmetrical and upright and just taut and bouncy. Yeah, stop me if I'm getting too vivid here. But, you know, I just remember seeing him also at this SCG a few years ago in some tapered chinos, just fitting in all the right areas. He's still got it.
Yeah, right.
So I'd like to see Brett Lee's hamstrings, not calves, just the hamstrings.
Just the hamstrings.
I don't know how you'd isolate that on some budgies, but I'd like to see what they do with it.
So this is all part of Budgie Smugglers' Ordinary Rig campaign heading into Christmas. We're creating custom smugglers. We want your suggestions for who will go on this. We think Nathan Lyon will probably get a go. We want a couple of more suggestions. What you got to do is just post in to at Budgie Smuggler and at Grad Cricketer, hashtag Great Australian Rig. According to Budgie Smuggler, there's three $50 vouchers from them to be given at random to people entering suggestions. Also, if you want custom smugglers for your club, jump onto the Budgie Smuggler website and they'll waive the production fee if there's over 20. So deadline for that's going to be around mid-November so we can get this done by Christmas. So give us your suggestions. Great Australian Rig for Budgie Smuggler. Okay, this guest has been on about 37 times. He's played 18 tests, scored 1,000 runs, highest 136, one ton, 650s, 143 first-class matches, over 10,000 runs, highest 225, average 42, 2,500s, 4,850s. Finn Review said he enjoys modern art, can talk with some authority on literature. He knows the company of Richard Flanagan if he was in it at a market in Tasmania. He's also the member of investment team at TDM Growth Partners, a private investment firm founded in 2004, investing in fast-growing companies. That's not an ad for that. He also sits on the board of Cricket New South Wales as a non-executive director, as a co-founder of Tripod, and yesterday hit 37 against Campbelltown Camden in a T20. Ed Cowan, welcome. How'd you hit him yesterday?
Sam Perry, thanks for having me back. I've promised to bring my best self today because I know the last time I was on this show, I probably let all three of you down, and I've reflected on that, and I've decided to come back stronger. It's a bit grumpy, but I've walked in with a smile on my face. Mm. Yesterday, let's talk about yesterday. Three horns, a hanger.
Well, let's just set the scene.
And then douse myself in Lynx Africa. Thank you very much, Max Hope, and shared a towel with someone. It was a fantastic Sunday out.
Did you go first with a towel? Or
no,
second.
Always go second.
We've rushed
it wasn't
this.
My towel.
A couple of people mightn't recognise what Campbelltown Camden is, so... You played grade cricket yesterday, is what we're saying.
Times two, yeah.
Times two. So run us through this.
Fairfield, Liverpool in the morning, T20 game. Thought coming in here, obviously on the Monday, need some stories
to get some
regale
research.
About. Yeah.
Content.
We'll try and hit sixes. First attempt, straight up the chimney, out.
Did you get a send off?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because you're wearing Australia lid.
And then got a couple away. got a couple away. Second innings,
right?
And then clean bowled, put the bail back on.
Got a couple away.
Yeah. Got a couple.
We need some close catches for the audience that don't understand these phrases.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Straight up the chimney, got a couple away.
all in a day's work at University Number One.
Yeah, you certainly weren't going out to Fairfield or Campbelltown Camden.
No, so Sydney Uni are in the Thunder T20 League. So there are two leagues that operate in Sydney club cricket.
That must have hurt Sydney Uni to be in the Thunder League.
Absolutely. But it also means that it rules out away games for me. Hawkesbury next week. No thanks.
Yeah. No way.
That's a real shame.
I'm just putting this together. You're on the Cricket New South Wales board. So I'm starting to put a few things together.
We'll be in the Sixers conference next year. Yeah.
Is that
Waverley Oval, Randwick, Sydney University? Yeah.
Well, just tell us about being on the board. I mean, last time we spoke, it was ahead of the Ashes series. So the main thing that's changed is that you've been announced to be on Cricket New South Wales' board. The cupboard's pretty fucking bare in New South Wales cricket. You've been there for 6 weeks. What are you doing to fix the state?
Well, when people talk about your first 100 days in office, Sam, I think I got elected and Australia retained the Ashes within a week.
So you claim that like I Trump think, claims the economy?
Yeah. Absolutely.
I think it was a week.
There's a pretty strong correlation between me being on the board of Cricket New South Wales and Australian cricket you know, on its way back to the top.
Are you going to be tweeting? Being part of the board or being part of New South Wales cricket involves having a heavy Twitter presence. You're going to step things up there?
As you know, even to come on this show was I had to jump through hoops and over hurdles. So you know,
had to go through a comms process as well.
Absolutely, had to go through the whole
the inquiries page on our website. That's just anonymous.
what does Cricket New South Wales say about like the pitfalls of coming onto this show?
I think they were a bit scared off. You know, previously you've interviewed Sock, and I think he let a few exuberant phrases go. So I think they were worried about how loose around the edges it gets. Mm-hmm. But I'll keep it pretty tight. I'll keep it tight.
Cool. Okay. So you've been mentioned as a possible new national selector. I guess what you know, that's obviously gone out to seek.com.au. I don't know if you put the application in, but...
Who's going to bat six?
I think the main question is, and this is what the country will essentially decide Ed's candidacy on, we don't even know if he's a candidate, is what's your position on Sean Marsh's re-entry into the side?
Well, you know, let's address the issues head on here, Sam. You know, I know conflicts of interest, you know, if you sit on boards in sport in Australia, it's assumed that you are heavily conflicted. I don't know if that's the benchmark we ought to hold ourselves to. So I think it probably rules me out of being official selector. I can still be a pub selector though, and I'm very happy to weigh into this debate.
But if someone slaps you on the shoulder and says, you know, an executive order has been issued and you can now be part of the selection panel, would you?
Like Peter Vlandis with being the CEO of rugby league and also racing.
Absolutely. Yeah. Hey, it's a free-for-all, basically. It's a jungle out there. I actually think the new selector's role should be one that applies a little bit more rigour than perhaps has been in the past. So I'd like to see someone get their teeth stuck in and treat it as a full-time job.
Right.
And obviously,
what have you observed it to be in the past?
Probably traditionally hasn't been probably given the time, I don't think, that it probably deserves.
Well, salary range on Seek is 150K plus, so it does seem to be equivalent to full-time job.
Absolutely.
Are you referring to Mark Wall selecting players while he's commentating Big Bash or something?
Well, there's a conflict to start with. Obviously, you know, like when... former selectors come to the head of high performance and say, you know, I don't think I need to go to the game with this live streaming bit.
Yeah.
Why do I need to actually watch the players?
It's a good point. Stream it.
It's on the internet now.
Yeah.
So I can just sit at home, maybe have a little side hustle betting over here and pick national teams for 150 large.
Yeah.
No worries.
In 4K. In
4K.
Plus
the rest. Yeah. Incentives.
4K. Absolutely.
What else do you need to be a selector? I mean, apart from, you know, intermediate proficiency in Microsoft software products. What
Excel,
Word, PowerPoint.
I don't know if it's, you know, even moved to Excel in the cloud. I think that's we're probably
offer that.
That could be something you bring in. Yeah,
sitting down with JL and how to use SaaS Excel products. I'm proficient of Microsoft Word. If you need to put a deck together, especially now that they can self-design them for you,
it's typing not, speed.
Selecting's not what it used to be. Yeah, just used to get around in a room and, you know,
nut it out,
pick them out of a hat. What was the question?
What do you need? Well, I mean, aside from watching games of cricket.
I think some base level of experience around what great teams look like, whether that's culturally, whether that's understanding what performance metrics are really important to build great teams.
Big data.
Absolutely. So I'd love someone, I'm going to throw two names at you, a George Bailey or a Cameron Watt. I think they would be fantastic national selectors.
Why?
Well, current experience, they know the playing group, they're in touch with the current game. They understand, as I said, that those key sort of metrics that of people that would contribute to teams.
Getting around other men.
Absolutely. Getting around them is obviously high on the...
Sharing towels.
Sharing towels, absolutely. A couple of cheap hundreds as well, here and there. I mean, who needs runs and wickets these days?
Well, exactly.
We do as a nation. I mean, we got some of those yesterday with Davey Warner. What do you think about
it? It was
a
big game,
start?
Wasn't it?
It was a big game.
Yeah. 230 plays 99. Great start to the summer.
Do you feel safe? Do you feel safe about Australian cricket as we do?
Yeah. Yep. I think the trend line is upwards. I'd like to see a few more batsmen emerge. I'm not going to lie.
How do you do that, though? Because, like, there's a bit of clear air in Australian cricket now. Obviously, there's no crisis. There's no industrial dispute. There's no big Ashes or World Cup or something. We've just got a couple of like lower
29
ranked nations.
29 T20.
Yeah.
We've got 24 T20 games. In the next 12 months. Can't
bit
wait,
of big bash and whatever. So like now we get to see whether Australia is going to kind of like rebuild the Death Star or actually commit to being nice blokes who do things a little bit differently or a bit more modern. Like, do you expect that to happen? How are you meant to select a side with Greg Chappell gone and not picking like 19-year-olds and killing state cricket in the meantime?
There's a little bit to unpack there, Pez.
Yeah. Take your time.
Yeah. Well, I think for culturally, they're definitely trending in the right direction. I think Tim Payne and Justin Lang have done a phenomenal job. I think in terms of a batsman emerging, I think it's just about raising the bar of expectation. So, you know, let's find some guys purely by lifting the expectation upon them, knowing that you're not going to get picked averaging 32 in Shield cricket four seasons in a row. You're going to have to be the superstar, and that will equate to getting a good run in the test team. So I think the basis is there, and there's no shortage of talent. I think how that talent's been managed, probably not in the last year, but before that transition to Justin Langer probably seems needs to be addressed, and it has been.
So, like, you're basically saying, like, if you score a boatload of runs, you get into the Aussie side.
Shock. It's a crazy theory.
Yeah, what? What about the 19 squad? Who are some of the names on your radar then? I mean, there's probably three spots in the Aussie batting order. Is it the people you're thinking of that kind of fit into the criteria you were just talking about?
Yeah, so I think when people post-Ashes think, who's going to open the batting? Is it going to be Marcus Harris? Well, for me, it has to be Marcus Harris. He's the dominant Shield player. He came back post-Ashes, got 100, admittedly in a game where there are about 23 other 100 scored, but you've got to get the runs on the board. So he deserves a chance to play at home again. He played well last summer against India without probably the huge results. Had a tough time of it in England, but probably should have started in the team. He deserves a chance to make a name for himself, I think. So there's probably one name that falls off the list. And then it's up to other people to put their hand up. You know, it's sad that someone like a Curtis Patterson is injured at the moment because he's one person that I think could fill that void. Sad that Mitch Marsh put his hand through the wall and won't be batting at six, we don't think. So,
do all roads point to Bukowski, you know, as well?
Yeah, I think they do at this point in time. I'd love to see him get one more 100 before that test team's picked, and he'll get a good crack at it in the next couple of weeks.
Is there any future planning going on? Because, like, let's say Shaun Marsh, for instance, right, 200 and whatever the other day. Like, there's no point going in with Shaun Marsh now because, as Pez said before, like, there's no big series for another couple of years. Exactly.
Yeah.
So is there a chance here to pick Bukowski, who might not be quite ready just yet, but give him a chance in the team to develop so in 2-3 years' time he's ready to go in the Ashes?
Well, heaps of tons on flat tracks against, like, you know, fourth and fifth rated test sides.
Hang on. I think, where are we? Sixth.
Better teams than us.
Yeah, but we retain the Ashes, teams. So everything's better now. Smith's back.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we've got great opportunity for him to learn with the likes of Smith. So I'm all for, at this point in time, you're right, getting someone who might be a little bit green around the edges. Hang on, is that a mixed metaphor?
Yeah.
What's a mentor?
Makes sense though.
Yeah.
It'd be rough around the edges.
Rough around the edges. Wet
behind the ears.
Wet behind the ears.
So you're saying Glenn Maxwell at three?
But isn't that what we've two eyes now?
Yeah.
What we've always done is to put players in there who maybe they're not quite ready, but they represent, you know, enormous upside and potential, and we just throw them in there and they learn from around the more experienced players. Do we have that number of experienced players now to guide them into that echelon?
Will Bukowski learning from Manus Labuschagne? Doesn't that just roll off the tongue? Look, I think we've got a generational player in Steve Smith who's very giving of his time. Dave Warner, 25 test hundreds. There's enough there to kind of learn not only from those two but a Justin Langer from a batting point of view. So I'm all for, you know, this slow recycling of youth coming into the team, and obviously Bukowski's at the top of that list. But having said that, you've got Joe Burns, you've got Curtis Patterson on the fringes, and then I guess the other sort of batting spot that people kind of look at is Travis Head and what happens to him. But I think he needs to go back and score some big runs and really earn that spot back.
What about bowlers? Just while on the test side and you're the next selector, there's like 87 quicks in Australia who could all play.
Amen.
So, yeah, so like that's a good thing too, I suppose. But like,
Bowlers win matches, Pez, as you know.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. What does that mean? Everyone wins matches.
Got to take 20 wickets to win games of cricket. Oh, okay.
So there's so many quicks who'd been your first four. I know that, you know, the easy option, they're like, oh, look, there's probably five or six. We'll take him in. We'll rotate him through. But like, let's talk specifically about Stark, for example, who finished the Ashes on the fringes, but is just such a world beater here. You know, do you have him in the 11?
Well, it depends. I think I'd love to see the old-fashioned horses for courses policy. When you do have these exceptional talents all in one squad, then why wouldn't you try and get more cricket out of Mitch Stark by picking him on surfaces that really suit him? And those surfaces are primarily wickets where the ball's reverse swinging. So at the Gabba, maybe, but it's more those wickets where you start to see some deterioration, the ball in reverse coming in. Then the other guys can stand the seam up, you know, at Adelaide or the Wacker.
So who's like just sitting underneath there? Because you could still say, oh, is it Nisa or Siddle or Pattinson or Jai Richardson's coming back and Langer loves Richardson. You know,
He's a good bowler. Yeah. I think we might have seen the end of Pete Siddle. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we probably said that 4 years ago as well. So,
what about Jackson Bird?
High quality bowler.
Mm.
High quality bowler has been for a long period of time. And I've said, I think on the radio before, in my mind, he's top 10 bowlers I've ever played with. He's a phenomenal bowler. Probably hasn't been given the opportunity in conditions that suit his style of bowling to play more for Australia. So there are lots of fast bowlers. I like Michael Ness's work. He's super high quality, and then as you say, Jai Richardson coming back. So there is scope to kind of pick and choose, have a squad of fast bowlers and try and, you know, expand the time frame where they're all fit together by using them in a really smart manner.
What about the other themes of the summer? You know, we've got to find things to talk about. There's a vacuum. Is he going to be captain? You know, at some point? Is Steve Smith going to be captain?
I don't think so. I think there'll be a push for that to happen, but I personally don't. I wouldn't want to see it happen. Mm. I think, Tim Payne's done a great job bringing the team back into the social conscience from, you know, basically being hated by every person in the country. It's now a team that you're pretty proud to support, I think. There will be a natural transition where he moves out of the team, I think, particularly with the emergence of Alex Carey. But when that happens, I don't think it's natural to assume that Steve Smith is going to be the captain. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a big difference between being the best leader and the best batsman. Mm-hmm. And he's clearly the best batsman, but is he the best leader? I'd love to see a Pat Cummins get a crack at being the test captain, that's for sure.
What do you say in response to, like, the, you know, the cricket legends who will just say, like, look, you can't pick a bowler, they get injured all the time, you need to stay on the park.
It's not 1975. So, no.
It's not what Rod Hogg thinks.
Second Rod Hogg on this podcast.
Don't drink water.
One of your favourites, Jeff Lawson, obviously captain New South Wales with aplomb over many seasons. Yeah. So I think where your leadership ability, look, to be honest, all the tactical stuff on the field is generally by consensus anyway. You know, it's not authoritarian in any sense. So it's more the captaincy away from the actual match day, the stuff that starts at 6 at night and ends at 10 in the morning before the next ball's bowled. You know, that's the important stuff that a captain really needs to focus on if they're trying to be cultural leaders as well. And you just got to pick the best leader for that.
And just on the winning the public over that you mentioned earlier. So you think we've done that? Like, mission achieved by Cricket Australia since Sandpaper Gate, obviously a traumatic time for Australian cricket. Have they won us? Are our hearts now with cricket in Australia? I mean,
I think we're on the path to recovery. I wouldn't say that every Australian is enamoured with the team, but you can't keep everyone happy, as you guys know. Just read the Facebook comments week in, week out.
Don't know what you're talking about. I feel like there has been a swing in the sentiment.
I think there's been a swing in the sentiment. And just looking at you, Edo, you look in great shape at the moment.
We actually have cameras.
Yeah, we did talk about this.
Have you done some pipe work recently?
That could mean a few things.
This is the first time anyone's mentioned my pipes on a broadcast. It's usually all this guy. Yourself in that TDM Growth Partners polo.
Lululemon. Looking very so comfortable.
I mean, I guess while we're on the topic of rigs and we're just talking about some serious summer themes, you obviously play great cricket. Yes, any tub stories? You know, can you, just for the people listening out there, like, you've spanned. I mean, who was the oldest player you played with when you started? I mean, there's some.
I've seen Tubbs around the globe. I've seen the best of the Tubbs.
Oh, I've seen some Tubbs here. I've seen some Tubbs.
The worst of the Tubbs.
Yeah.
Some random Tubb team members.
Yeah.
Looking no further than Greg Matthews.
Sure.
Who sometimes
he refuses to come onto this podcast.
Refuses to
look. Rightly or wrongly, I can't comment on Greg's position there, but I do remember Greg tubbing with the opposition a few times.
Yeah,
where, like bad here.
Mate, I'm about to get into story mode, and here you are cracking gags. But Mo, I don't think you're getting your head around this. Mo would tub with the opposition if he liked the look of one of the younger players in the opposition. He'd just freak him out by turning up in the tub nude.
We did hear a similar thing from Jim Maxwell on that note, which... we've talked about, but probably won't need to talk about again.
Frightening stuff.
But tubbing, with the opposition, that's big in the UK. I remember when I played rugby over there, you were encouraged to tub together. Mm. There was a big communal shower.
Brings men together.
Doesn't it?
Mm. Morning.
Play hard on the field, play hard off the field.
what does that mean?
You really said that with your eyes when you looked at me as well. Mornay Morkel played for Manly over the weekend.
Legend.
Do you reckon he's going straight into the showers? First game, plenty confidence.
Plenty of confidence.
Heaps of test wickets.
Yeah. I'm thinking that's not breeding his confidence. He's 6'8". There's not much missing to Mornay, I don't think.
Have you sent him a message just reminding him that you're at 136 at the Gabba off his bowling?
That's a nice reminder. I might just get on the tweet and throw it out there. He's in all honesty, I know you love this question. Who's the hardest bowler you've ever faced, Pez? Because that's right up your
alley. That was going to be my next question,
Mornay Morkel, number one.
The guy who's got 100 against. Not Stain.
It's like, have you ever seen that Kevin Peterson documentary?
Yeah.
No.
You haven't seen it where he's
talking. It's geo-blocked in Australia.
Was it? Yeah. He's talking through his best hundreds and he's like, Dalio was bowling so fast that day, I could hardly see it. It was flying past my head. It was in the dark and I looked up and all of a sudden I was 156.
The trail off there is good.
I hate when that happens. He's like, I'm 156. Oh, yeah.
It was so fast. So fast.
They lost yesterday. Man, Mornay's team lost.
Did they?
Yeah, really?
They lost twice on the weekend, actually, the Manly boys. Sydney Uni chased down 468 on the Saturday.
Right.
We should say,
put that in the great cricket annals.
Well, Sydney University is sort of widely regarded as a very successful and also Sydney's most arrogant club. And
what? Are you joking?
No. I don't think anyone would disagree with that, would they?
Most arrogant?
Yes.
Mate, that's crazy.
It's up there.
Most number of narcissists within this club.
What have I walked into here? Yeah, you guys are...
No, I was going to say, this is just a backhanded compliment because you guys also, they do some very verbose reports after every game. And I did note this morning when the Sydney Uni one came out that you just elevated yourself to the second highest ever run score in Sydney University.
Behind
the great Greg Mahal, I'd love to come to this podcast as well.
I can tee that up.
Yeah.
The greatest ever grade cricketer.
Mm.
Yeah.
Do you think he'd appreciate that title?
He's fourth greatest grade cricketer.
No, he's not.
Well, it's three.
You three.
Yeah, maybe.
I think he'd wear that as a badge of honour.
Yeah.
Mm.
Good player.
You'd have to put the microphone just on the side of his mouth, though, because he only speaks.
Does he? Is he a side mouth?
Have you never met the great GJ Mayo? I know he's a hero of yours.
I certainly have met him, actually.
You know, you played for the Tigers together, didn't you? Didn't pick you in first grade that time.
No, he did actually, and anyway, it's a long thing. But
have you ever told that story?
Yeah, I think I have.
On air?
Yeah.
Again? I have. Come on.
Are you rapping? what does it mean to be number two at Sydney University?
The oldest cricket club in Australia. So, it's proud. It's a great cricket club. I don't know where this arrogance that you... it's certainly not a theme, having been around the club for 24 seasons, that I'd associate with the university.
It's obviously an extremely successful club.
It is now. It hasn't always been.
As humble.
People envy success and history and tradition.
I don't know. In the last 20 years, it probably has been the most successful club, but it was coming off a very low base. It hadn't won a first grade premiership for, I think, 80 years, so...
And then you arrived.
I was more Ryan Carter, I think.
Yeah.
Are you going to captain threes in a couple of years?
Wouldn't mind that.
I'm
waiting for my nephews to grow up a little bit.
Right.
So one's 10 at the moment. He's shown an interest in cricket. Get him to sort of 14. He might be a sixth grader. I'll get him in threes, and then we can
Is there any kind of conflict of being on the Sydney Uni board with New South Wales board duties? I mean, you've got so many boards now that you're on.
I'm actually not on the Sydney University board.
But would you like to be?
No.
Okay.
Yeah. Time allocation. That's right. It's a very well-run club, though, so they don't need me. That's for sure.
Do you think grade cricket's changed a lot, like, since you started to now? Like, I mean, we've gone through tubbing culture. Doesn't seem to have changed
hasn't
much.
Hasn't changed
but,
much.
You know, is it roughly the same experience as it was when you were sort of 18, 19?
Absolutely. One thing that pains me a little bit is you hear these old guys say, oh, it's not what it used to be. It's not as hard as it used to be. There's not enough talent coming through club cricket. That was my impression of, you know,
us.
Basically. I think it's all fibs. Mm. I've seen so much talent in the last couple of years playing club cricket, particularly in the shorter formats. You see guys doing stuff you wouldn't have dreamt of doing 20 years ago. The skill level's there. The tubbing culture's still there. I don't think teams mingle as much as they probably used to. Drink as much beer after the game. There was a washout the other day, I think in round two, and everyone went to the gym. We used to go to the pub, which is a bit disappointing. But I think in terms of skill and competition, it's all there still.
So players are better and healthier.
Basically, yeah.
Okay. Well, nothing else from you two fellas, so we wish you all the best. Ed, thanks for coming on for, I think, maybe your 13th time to the Grad Cricketer podcast, and there's a number of Cricket News as well sponsored comments that you made. I suppose that's just comes with the territory.
Yeah.
But I suppose next time we see you might be the new national selector. So.
Absolutely. Anyway. Let's hope so.
Cheers.
Thanks for having me.
Pavel Florin, a very warm welcome to the Grad Cricketer podcast, mate.
I have a bad experience with the police when opened my trunk and there was the bat of cricket and I tried playing. Guys, I am a player of cricket and these guys say, what is the cricket? I don't know. And I say, okay, it's a sport, I'm a sport and don't believe me the police. And I say, okay, but think, how I can't go to the fight with this bat? It's very heavy and you can't go to the fight with the cricket bat. It's not efficiency.
Hashtag ask TGC, gents. Wonderful to speak to both Russell Arnold and Ed Cowan on the show. Wonderful stuff. This is a great chance for us to mention the live shows we'll be doing this year. It's a whole new act. If you come to see us before, come and see us again because it's a whole new thing, new guests, new everything. The first show is in Brisbane. That's coming up, lads. It's only a couple of weeks away. We're going to be at the Princess Theatre Thursday, November 21. That's the night after day one of the first test match of the summer, 7:30 p.m. with Jason Gillespie. Good guest.
Huge.
Good room as well. Checked it out.
Jason Gillespie is very TGC areas, self-effacing, but got a few levels.
That's right.
What the fuck does that even mean?
Don't even know. That's gonna be good. Looking forward to that. Let's kick off the tour. Pez, you and I are heading to Adelaide.
Yes.
We're doing the Rhino Room Saturday, November 30, 12 p.m. That's with Sean Tate. We're doing 12 p.m. because it's a day-night test match. So make that just the best day of your life. If you're going to the cricket that day, we'll be wrapped up, giving you plenty of time to walk up to
the best
Adelaide
way to
Oval.
Prepare for a day-night test. I've always said that.
Yeah. A few people commented on social media saying Khan got cricket, which is, first of all, very funny, using our own humour against us. Well played. Also, why are you playing cricket when the test match? You get one test a year, day-night test match. It is like the thing to do in Adelaide for the year.
Isn't grade cricket off that day, though?
Grade cricket is off, but yeah.
Lower levels.
Lower levels, and we don't really want
which is
them
our core demographic. Really.
We actually don't really want
we
them
We don't
going.
Want them there, but they are our core demographic, regrettably.
I was actually, it was suggested to me this week by a former grade cricket teammate of mine that it needs to be changed to park cricketer because of the content we're putting together. And I said, okay, no worries, I'll just change it.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Oh, you should have told me that at the top of the show. I keep calling it the Grade Cricketer podcast. Mm. That's my mistake. So Saturday, November 30, 12 p.m., that's with Sean Tate, local hometown boy.
Wild thing.
Well, the wild thing. On the Saturday, that's day two of the Adelaide Test Match Runner Room. All these tickets are going to be greatcricket.club. You know the deal. We've got two shows in Melbourne, two shows in Sydney after that, the Corner Hotel, the Comedy Store. You know the dates. John Hastings is going to be our guest for Melbourne. That's going to be awesome as well. Then Sydney after that into the new year in 2020. I can't believe it's 2020. Much like Glenn Maxwell's vision, now he's using two eyes. Greatcricket.club. is where you can get all the tickets. Let's move on because you had enough of me talking about live shows we're going to be doing. But please do come because they're great nights out, great days out if you're in Adelaide, rolling into one of the biggest days of your life. All right, Steve Stevens writes in. Hashtag RCDCs. I explained cricket to a Brazilian dad during our kids under 11 game this morning. At the end, he said, "The more I learn about this game, the more I dislike it. How do I best respond whilst ensuring he keeps taking his son to cricket?"
Well, Steve. Is Steve the guy that has an avatar of him playing a cover drive?
Correct. He's coming before. He's coming a couple of times, I think, actually.
Good questions.
Good question.
Good shot, too.
Mm-hmm. Where's the ball in that profile?
Good question.
The stumps aren't in shot either, so it's interesting. Yeah.
It's like the Victor Krumper shot. It wasn't actually even
it wasn't
playing.
It wasn't a game. It wasn't a game.
That was a good shot, though. Well, I think the first thing to understand is, like, well, that's a Brazilian dad would say that. I mean, if you grew up in the home of football.
Mm. Yeah. And jiu-jitsu.
Football.
What would you think about fucking cricket? You're like, oh, I grew up with Pelé, mate.
Mm.
Yeah.
Pelé. With Cafu. with Roberto Carlos. And now what's he watching? Fucking Finchy.
Also, the way, the more I learn about this game, the more I dislike it.
Perfectly put.
It's just perfectly put, isn't it? I'm thinking that tattooed.
Yeah.
On my lower back.
I like that you've added the accent. It could have perfect, English dialect. Yeah. It's not parkour, is it? It's not jujitsu. It's not, there's nothing interesting about cricket. There's no athleticism to it. I want my kid to be able to defend himself, also have some straight cred.
Parkour. Isn't that the one where they just fucking jump around and stuff?
Yeah. That's your explanation of parkour? Yeah. No, they just jump around and shit.
It's one of the great office scenes. US?
I don't think I've ever explained cricket to a foreign person and had it dealt with favourably.
Nah.
Because where do you start?
Yeah.
I mean...
There's so many terrible aspects to the game.
Yeah. So it's got a pitch in line, then hit in line. If it's outside the line, but they're not playing a shot. Yeah. Mm.
I guess, you could just say off this man, you would agree.
Yeah.
I agree.
Spot on, mate. Yeah.
Okay. The next question comes as a great question. I love this. So from Tamara Rogers. She says, "G'day, gents. I'm a single 29-year-old heterosexual female with an average rig, nice teeth, and well-maintained salad. I write seeking advice on my love life. I genuinely love cricket and have a decent knowledge of the game. When I meet men and the conversation turns to sports, I often, automatically and regrettably, have verbal diarrhea about cricket history, statistics, and players. Although I watch as their smiles devolve to amused intrigue, then tolerant confusion, finally setting on utter boredom and or discomfort, I feel powerless to stop myself. When I find myself in a relationship, my partner inevitably starts eyeing me with suspicion as I gush about Aaron Finch's cover drive, Marcus Stoinis's sixes over long on, Pat Cummins's Yorker, and Elise Perry's general awesomeness. Cricket obsession aside, I am, perhaps unsurprisingly, a fairly normal, independent, active woman who has plenty of friends, enjoys a nice red, and generally, I love life. Hashtag blessed. Does my love and knowledge of the game unintentionally chick alpha prospective life partners? Should I pretend to be less interested in the game in order to snag a mate? Or, when dating a cricketer, should I go out of my way to avoid all of their games, hoping that in some very twisted form of an Oedipus complex, they will become more desperate to seek my approval? Is there some way I can make my love of the game more sexy, a la Lara Bingle circa 2006, but hopefully with more dignity? Or, acknowledging that I've possibly lost all my dignity in even asking these questions, should I accept that I may be single forever? Here goes. Fancy a date?" Thanks, Tamara.
Was that just you adding the last bit?
You can see on the screen, he goes, that I'm not.
I find that talking about cricket in any sort of... It's not an aphrodisiac, cricket discussion.
It's no aphrodisiac.
For some reason...
Although it is loneliness.
I want to keep going with that. I saw Tim Friedman the other day in the airport. Anyway. Yeah, he was carrying an espresso machine. Sorry, Tamara. Yeah. Carry on.
We saw Tim Minchin at Singapore Qantas Lounge as well, Pez and I. Complete aside.
Now you were saying, here, it's not an aphrodisiac.
As the only single member of this trio, I do get asked when we're doing.
That line gets a run every second episode, doesn't it?
No. The only non-married, childless.
Exactly. Yeah.
Of the trio.
Yeah. I think, as you said a while ago, no one will survive me.
Your obituary would just be like, he was one third of the crew.
Yeah.
It won't even finish.
It'd be my Instagram bio. That's what it would read. I get asked by people when we do events and live shows and stuff, just like, oh, do you meet heaps of women by doing this? Surprisingly, no, not really. Not really.
Real shock.
Yeah, real shock.
Real shock. 99% of our followers are male.
Yeah, and like I don't find cricket a sexy conversation to talk about on dates with anyone. I think Tamara can join the same boat here. Mm. It's just like what you want to do is for Tamara, I think, you just want to like meet someone organically, do what you know, and have a relationship.
That's
and
hard these days to meet people like, organically.
But then like drip feed that she actually knows quite a lot about cricket, you know, dropping the Lara Bingle reference. It's like, oh, I remember when Clark was saying Lara Bingle. And I, they'd be like, oh, shock. You're like, oh, do you know? But like, you know, just that kind of like drip feed the information right. that you're actually quite...
So instead
learned
of
about the game.
Autistically reciting shield statistics,
that's not going to be
just
good.
Just kind of represent a healthy balance of hobbies and interests, and then drip feed a little bit of cricket chat within that.
Spot on.
Prism. You're saying this is how you would like to be wooed by a cricket lover.
Yeah,
you would like it to be drip fed to you slowly.
So how many dates would it take before she can start reciting Marcus Stoinis's bicep circumference?
De facto.
De facto. So living with.
Yeah.
Moving in, then can talk.
That's not a time frame. That's just the relationship status.
Don't mention his bicep circumference until we're in a de facto relationship. And legally.
And even then, yeah, legally, yeah. So it's at 2 years, yeah.
Yeah.
So when you selected this question for AskTGC, as you did, you would obviously have then Googled Tamara or Facebooked her or whatever you young children do these days with the internet. She's asked a question publicly.
Yeah, let's go on a date tomorrow. I couldn't find you on the internet. I'll find you on LinkedIn.
Well, Tamara, that's he goes inviting you to get in touch with him and to go on a date. And that's this show using people's emotions and relationships for our own entertainment, cynically so.
This is this episode of Perfect Partners on The Footy Show.
As long as Pez and Dave can come as well and we do a show.
Well, we do everything together.
100%. I enjoyed your honeymoon last week.
At my wedding, it was strange how you found yourself at the head of the wedding table.
I didn't feel comfortable.
What were you doing there?
Didn't you arrange the tables?
It wasn't assigned seating.
So what happened was...
Also, sit at my table, but not near me.
Yeah.
Not on the head of the table.
So what happened was... Okay. So what happened was... So it was Dave's wedding last Saturday. Mm. Pez and I came along. Mm. We were invited. We came along.
We rocked up. Just for the ceremony.
We're wearing whites. Mm. Pez and I were split apart at different tables.
Tactically
split apart.
Meet new people.
So I ended up sitting next to you and your new wife and between your brother and his wife, the best man. I was between the four of you. I was the biggest fifth wheel at a wedding there's ever been.
But for the listeners, what's just happened there is that like Higos has seen himself on the head table and then inserted himself right next to the bride and groom. And now on air, Dave said, what the fuck were you doing sitting next to me? You don't belong here.
That's not what happened.
All for entertainment, but it's true.
Yeah,
all for entertainment.
Anyway, so tomorrow you can go with. He goes to the next wedding.
Mm.
Good point. Well, it's going to be our wedding tomorrow.
Last one today, lads. Matthew Donaghy. Hey, Ask TGC. This season, I changed clubs due to a variety of reasons. Brackets. Teammate narcissism being the main one. Close brackets. I decided to play with a co-worker due to him being a good bloke. Unfortunately, my year has started poorly with two ducks, and due to my co-worker, this news has spread around the office. Which of the following three is my best option? One, get good despite being 30, looking like a swollen pear and having a receding hairline.
Oh.
Two, go back to university accumulating more hex debt and working at a cubicle job that will suck me dry like cricket does anyway.
What?
Or three, quit cricket and get big. Thanks, Matthew. So he's given you three options.
Oh, number one, get good.
Despite being 30, well, that goes against every Australian selection policy since 2004.
So I reckon with Matthew, he can only succeed by scoring runs now. He's actually got himself in a position where he needs to play the game and do it well.
At some point you need to, don't
you? To get back the social capital lost with the co-worker. Because the co-worker's brought him in, he's thought, I'm going to be big fish, small pond here. I'm going to play the game. And he needs runs. He needs runs desperately. Well, Travis Head recently said he's not out of form, he's out of runs. Matthew could be
runs
the same.
Runs as a currency.
Runs as a currency.
So maybe just print more runs.
You're saying, like, he's at the point where the only way for him to be a success, inverted commas, in cricket is to score runs. He has no other way. And it begs the question of, like, what are the ways to succeed in cricket? And the other way, obviously, is to get a rig.
Yeah.
Right? And so my question to both of you is, as someone, like, if you're somebody who is both poor at the game and have a poor rig, and so, let's say, for argument's sake, those variables are equal.
Okay.
What is the fastest way to success? Is it easier to get a rig or is it easier to get good at cricket?
Depends what age you are.
Okay, he's 30.
Runs.
Harder to get a rig from 30. If you don't have a rig at 30, it's harder to get a rig than to go into like caloric deficit, get yourself down to say 75 kilos.
Yeah, exactly. Oh. I mean, well, the third question he's posed is quit cricket and get big, but big isn't the only way of having good cricket. I mean, having good rig, should I say? Mm-hmm. Having a good cricket.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He can have a caloric deficit. He can slim down, and then maybe he has done a little bit of touch work on the toning side of things, and you can be one of those slim guys who are good at yoga. And kind of lithe and lean. And he could be one of those rigs.
Yeah. He goes to saying that's harder than scoring runs. And like, we're all sitting in the room, we probably average about 17 in cricket. Like, it's very difficult to score runs. And you're saying it's even harder to get a rig.
No. I am saying that.
It's, what is a rig?
It'll take 3 months. If he has no rig, if he's a high BMI, he has no rig. It'll take 3 months.
Well, he says he looks like a swollen pet.
3 months minimum. 3 months minimum to get a rig. He just needs one score.
That's an off-season.
One score.
That's not getting good. One score isn't getting good.
He just needs to get the social capital back.
Yeah. One score. How long did... Yeah, okay.
One score. He just needs to get like a 70.
Also, a single teammate's narcissism has forced him to change clubs.
That's worrying.
Well, it says a lot about Matthew here. Yeah.
That's... Like, I need more information on this character.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I've diagnosed a teammate with narcissism personality complex. I'm out. Gone across the bridge.
This new club, though, they won't have any narcissists.
No. Cricket clubs aren't completely stocked with narcissists and various personality disorders.
Well, that's the Great Cricketer Podcast with me, Ian Higgins, Dave Edwards and Sam Berry. Thanks very much to Ed Cowan and Russell Arna for joining the show. And for you, as ever, for listening to this show.